Woodworkers for the Blind presents MicroJig, Smarter Woodworking Tools, with founder Henry Wang and Ralph Bagnall, writer extraordinaire.
The newest gripper line is what we call the Gripper to Go. We designed that because it required no adjustment.
It's going to be consistently always the same thickness. Even if you're not exactly at the dimension you wanted, most of the time in woodworking, consistency is more important than accuracy.
Every product that I design and launch, and it has a little different features that no one else has.
MicroJig's number, it's 855-747-7233.
What about the website?
MicroJig.com.
And you can find Woodworkers for the Blind on the web at www4b.org. A lot of blind and visually impaired woodworkers sharing ideas, thoughts, projects, and a lot of how-to-dos with each other. It's a great community. Check it out, www4b.org. Now our host, Daryl Vickers, will take it away.
All right, Mr. Jeff, did you get the recording going, buddy?
Huh? Oh, just a second. Oh, got it. Oh, hold on. Okay, we're rolling.
All right. Well, good evening, everybody. Thanks for being on the call. We've got a couple quick things. Been doing some work to the website, so it's past some improvements, I hope. And today we've got the folks from MicroJig, Henry Wang and Ralph Bagnall. So thanks you guys for being here. A lot of us in the group use your products, though I will say that I was a little late to the party. I didn't get a gripper until last year, and I wished I'd got it years ago. Henry, I'll start with you. Maybe give us a little background on you and your company, and we'll go from there.
Sure. My name is Henry Wang, and I started the company in 2001. I started MicroJig, and the gripper was our first product that we ever launched. And since its launch, well, actually, I launched it in 2001, which in September, it happened just to be right after 9/11. In the same year. So it's a little bit different than what the other company would do. And it took me some time to get it done correctly. And I think after a couple years, because it was such a new concept in those days, it took me some time to bring it to people, understand it, but finally did. And then it's doing well. Then I start looking into all other type of products that what we can help woodworkers to get their job done better, safer, and easier. So that's my goal. When I go through do my own woodworking, I always looking at, oh, what are the things that it's not on the market and what are the things that we can make it better and stuff like that. So I'm always looking in that directions, and every product that I design and launch, and it has a little different features that no one else has.
Henry, what is your background exactly?
I was a woodworker for many, many years, but that I was just a hobbyist. I came from Hong Kong. After my college, I started doing import and export business, and I was still in Hong Kong, and I moved to U.S., in 1976, in U.S., I starting some restaurant business. So I've been doing some restaurants business for a little bit. And at the same time, I was also getting developed into the hobbies of doing woodworking and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I started building quite a different things for the restaurants and helping the restaurant business. That's how I actually developed my interest in creating things. And at one point when I was in the restaurant business, then I was thinking, oh, it's a long hour business and I have to be in the restaurants like 12 to 14 hours every day. So I just asked myself, oh, by the time getting older, I don't think I can standing for that long in the restaurant. So
that's a lot. Yeah.
When that happened, that was in my late 40s. So I start looking into developing product for the woodworking. I purely designed my product based on my thinkings and my experience of how I get things done and how I create things. So it's strictly from that angle how I create it. But I like to get into deeper thought, you know. I like to come up with the ideas and I get a structure how I'm going to create that. But once I get the foundation done, then I'm actually spending more time to refine it. So I like to get into a little bit more details and get the things work more precisely and more functional, you know, capable. I came up with a lot of different ideas, but not every idea is going to be, can be turned into a product. A lot of them, I do things I can put into products. So every product that I design has some new features to it and something unique that no one else has. Almost every product that we came out with, we have a patent on it because it's unique than anyone else. Yeah, the other day I was just counting. I think that I have about 38 patents so far.
Wow, that's incredible, yeah.
Well, thank you. I just keep thinking about creating, especially, you know, I also work with Ralph. You know, Ralph has been helping us in the MicroJigs for how long now? 15 years at least?
At least that, yeah.
Ralph is worked with us full time. So a lot of the new products that we have put out now, Ralph has a lot of input in those, which makes it better than my own thinking.
Yeah, well, that's really great. I want to talk about a gripper because, like I said, I'm a little slow and I wished I'd got it a long time ago. And it's great for safety, but I just get a much cleaner cut with it, a much cleaner rip with that. And I've tried so many other things to get a nice straight rip. And the gripper gives me my best shot at that because of what it does.
Oh, thank you.
And you can explain that a little bit further. And I know you have a new one out too that I think Mr. Walker has it. And looking forward to getting one of those myself. It's a different version of your gripper, correct?
The newest gripper line is what we call the gripper to go. We designed that because it requires no adjustment. You know, the gripper, you can make a lot of different type of adjustment for all different kind of cut, but the to go is straightforward. There's no adjustment to it at all. It takes care of all this basic ripping on the table saw. We put an offset on one side of the gripper to go, which means if you turn the push block 100 degree front to the back, it actually creates a different spacing from the fence. You don't really need to make adjustments to achieve that. So all it does is you flip around 180 degree and it will do that. We also put in a coating in there to help someone to cut it without damaging into the to-go. We also put a detent on the handle. It's for your thumb to rest in that location.
Oh, uh-huh.
When your thumb is resting on that location, so your palm is actually, it's on the angle, on the end of the handle. So you will be actually help you to push the gripper forward.
Okay.
If you holding the gripper by the handle in the center, a lot of time your forward pressure is more towards the front end.
Okay.
So you are always pushing forward instead of like pulling forward.
I understand. Yes, I understand.
That is what we put it in the new gripper to go. The gripper, regular gripper, would do anything what the to go will do. But a lot of time, I find myself when I work in the shop, and sometimes I just like to grab the to go because I don't have to make any adjustment, and it's very, very handy. You know, it's there, and
right.
It's more of a handy type of push block. I think it's doing very well, and it's also at a lower cost.
And it's available now, Henry?
Yeah, it is available on the market. Yes, it is. Yes.
Okay, great.
In fact, you know, when we start selling this, we find out almost about half of the sales of the to-go is actually from the gripper owner.
Oh, yeah, I plan on getting one too, because it's very true. Sometimes you just need one to be pretty straightforward and go and not have to worry about hitting, you know, I've I guess we probably, most of us have. I've already cut into my gripper once before, but it's a tough guy, so it doesn't really hurt it.
Yeah. You know, the main thing is to protect your hand, you know, and especially this group of woodworkers. And we really appreciate that you guys are using our products, and that's wonderful. Dan is actually in today's meeting?
Dennis says yes.
Yeah, I'm here, Henry.
Oh, okay. How you doing?
Yes.
I want to cover a couple things, Henry, if I could.
Yeah, sure, of course.
There's been a lot of discussions. We have about 180 members nowadays worldwide, mm-hmm. and this call will be recorded. A lot of people will listen to it later. So there's been a lot of discussion on our list about the lock miter, and I have it, and I've spent a lot of sawdust getting it set up. Once I figured it out, it was fine. But Dennis was telling me about your lock miter bid and your setup gauge. I don't want you to go into too much detail because we'd be here for hours, but explain why it's different, I guess, than a normal lock miter bid.
The lock miter is a wonderful joint that's very, very useful. But, and I've been using them for almost 40 years, the problem with it is that you need to be setting the center of the profile, the tongue and groove profile of the lock miter, to exactly the center point of the thickness of your stock. And that's very, very difficult to do. So 2 years ago, Henry had come up with what we call our FitFinder half gauge. And it's a very simple device that has two moving parts. When you set what we call P2, the main piece, on top of a piece of stock, P3 is attached to it mechanically on a 45-degree slide so that wherever P2 is measuring to, P3 will indicate the halfway point from 0 to 3 inches. So this makes finding the center point very, very simple. It's very good for half laps and, you know, that sort of joinery. It's also very good for transferring. A lot of times I'll use it to, if I have two bits that have to match each other, like let's say a tongue and groove setup, I can set one up and then use the fit finder to measure off, let's say, the top of the tongue that I just cut in a piece of wood, and then I can use that to transfer and raise the router bit up until it touches the bottom of my fit finder to set the groove cut. So there's a lot of transfer of dimensions. You don't have to know the numbers. You're just transferring.
Oh, I understand. I thought this was just for the lock miter bit, but you can use it for other bits. So.
It's a very useful tool. It came out first, and then we decided, okay, what can we use this for? And one of the things Henry and I were talking about was the lock miter bit. So the problem with the lock miter is that the center point, if you imagine the lock miter is a 45-degree angle that's interrupted in the middle with a tongue and groove section on the cutter. But unfortunately, the center point of the cutter from top to bottom is halfway along the slope that leads from one tongue to the other groove, you know, from one half of that tongue and groove joint to the other, which is very, very difficult to locate physically on the bit. Makes it very hard to set up. The other part that makes it hard to set up is because of the way it's made with a lock miter, just like with a chamfer bit, you want to cut all of the edge of the board, but none of the top.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But with the lock miter, with a chamfer bit, it doesn't really matter where you're cutting along that chamfer bit. If it's bigger than the thickness of your stock, as long as it's set up right, you can cut anywhere. But of course, the lock miter, that tongue and groove has to be dead center. So what we chose to do was we didn't change the profile much. We have our own profile a little bit, but it's basically the same as others. But what we did was in the manufacturing process, we've milled a step into the body of the bit. Because you can't mark the carbide or else it'll leave a mark behind on the wood. But on the body of the bit at the exact center point, we've set up a shelf. We've cut a groove into the body that now offers a flat shelf that once you set your fit finder to the halfway point of your stock, you can raise the bit up in the router table until that step touches the underside of the P3 measurement point. Once those two are touching, and it is a very tactile thing, it's not a visual thing. I actually raised the blade up a little bit too high, and then I use my fit finder to tap against the wall of the body, lowering the bit very slowly until the fit finder slides over the top of it without bumping. So once you do that, now the height is set. The problem is with a typical lock miter, if you've ever used one, in order to get the fit right, if you have to adjust the height, you also have to move the fence to preserve that 45 at exactly the right height. We eliminate that. So once you use the fit finder to set the lock miter bit to the height it's at, then all we have to do from there is adjust the fence to the right place. And again, it's very tactile. You want the top of the stock, the face of the fence, and the carbide on the lock miter bit, the actual cutter, all to meet in the same spot. But because of the way the body of the lock miter is, you can't get in tight. So put a steel rule on top of your stock, slide it back until it hits the fence, and then move that steel rule over until it encounters where the bit is. And you'll be able to feel when the steel rule is just scraping the cutter edge. When you feel that, that's the proper adjustment. And so usually with our bit, I was shooting some video just today, and I had to set up the lock miter bit because I'm doing another tip on how to set it up. And I was able to set it up the first try. I had to make one tiny adjustment to the fence of about a 32nd of an inch, maybe a little less, just to get it right, you know, to dial it in. Mm-hmm. But instead of making test cut after test cut, I can get it right either the first setup or with one minor adjustment. It really, really makes the process of using the lock miter bit much, much easier. And we've been very pleased with it. And I think we've sold more of our lock miter bit so far, that, you know, since it came out, than just about all the other brands in the U.S. combined, just because it's a wonderful bit and it's a great joint, but people shy away from it because it has such a bad reputation for being hard to set up. And it's a well-deserved reputation. It is hard to set up.
This is true.
But this one works very, very well because of that spot, that step. Now you have a way to physically set the height of the bit. And once that's set, you don't mess with it anymore. Any adjustments from there are only on the fence. It just simplifies the process tremendously.
Right. Well, that sounds really good. Another product that is coming into my shop pretty soon, and it's your dovetail clamp.
Match fit.
Thank you. Just would not pop into my head. Oh, this age thing. So talk about that guy a little bit, because there again, I've seen it in use, and I think it's just a great idea. But if you could talk about that a little bit.
Well, the match fit, basically, Henry came up with the match fit concept because buying T-Track is just expensive. And I'm a jig and fixture maker from way back. That's, you know, the primary thrust of my career, 40 years in woodworking. And I've used T-Track by the mile over the years, but it is very expensive. And so the concept is that rather than buying and embedding an aluminum extruded T-Track into your jigs and fixtures or whatever else, if you plow a dovetail groove, half inch wide, 14 degree dovetail, 3/8 of an inch deep, anywhere you can plow that groove, in a fence face, in a jig or a sled body, on a whatever, doesn't matter.
Right.
Anywhere you can plow that groove, you now have originally a clamp where the head of the clamp is forged into that same 14 degree half inch dovetail profile. So it slides into that groove just like, you know, T-bolts slide in T-Track. Mm-hmm. And you can now add a clamp anywhere you can make that groove. One of my very favorite early uses for it was when I put a sacrificial fence on my table saw before the match fit system. I would, you know, clamp it with standard F-style clamps, but I always had to make sure that they were out of the way so they weren't interfering with the cut that I was trying to make with the clamp head, you know, hanging out over the table saw.
Right.
With the dovetail clamp, you take your sacrificial strip of plywood, you put two dovetail grooves or three, whatever, however many, but you put a couple grooves in the back of it, side to side, basically, so going up and down when you put it in place against your rip fence. And then when you slide the head of the clamp in there and clamp it to your rip fence, the head of the clamp is buried inside the sacrificial fence. It's completely out of the way.
Oh, yeah. Great idea.
So we've developed a whole system of clamping tables and all kinds of ways to use. We have our standard dovetail clamp, which is a small F-style clamp with about a 5 1/4 inch throat depth, 5 3/8. Then we came out with the AP clamp. It has the same head, a slightly longer bar, almost 8 inches of opening, you know, jaw capacity, but it also has a spring on the arm, which is a wonderful thing because that spring preloads the arm. It keeps it from moving when the clamp isn't engaged with something. So, you know how when you're setting up a clamp, sometimes you take your part out, you bump something, and it drops to the table, you got to lift it back up. The AP clamp doesn't do that.
Yeah.
And so that's been very popular. I like it for jigs and fixtures. I do a lot of router table stuff with using a sled that actually has the profile on it, so a template sled. And these clamps are fantastic for that because I can loosen up the clamps, take the part out, put the fresh part in, clamp it back down, and run it across my router table, you know, do production cutting without having to worry about them falling down every time I open them up. And then the most recent one we just brought out is called a ratchet clamp. So it's the same dovetail head. It has the same spring, so the arm doesn't slide on its own, but it's got the ratchet mechanism rather than an Acme screw to close the clamp. That one is especially wonderful because we've actually added a couple of steps along the top edge or the narrow part of the dovetail. So not only does it fit in our dovetail slot, but the flats will actually meet properly. If any of you are using track saws, the track saw track, these clamps will work with the track saw track. And because it has that same AP spring that the AP clamp does, when you loosen the clamps to reset your track to the next measurement, the arm doesn't drop all the way to the bottom. So you can actually move the track saw track, lock it back in place without having to reset the clamps each and every time. It's wonderful. I've got the Festool system at our shop, at the Microjig shop, and it used to drive me crazy because every time I'd release the clamps, they'd slide all the way down to the end of the bar, and I'd have to slide them back up and then rehook them.
Right.
I don't have to do that anymore. It's a wonderful piece. And then we came out with a complete set of hardware that also slides into that same dovetail. So you have what we call track screws. It's got a molded dovetail head that slides into the track, but has threaded rod that sticks up from it, 1 inch long. We have 1.5 inch and 2 inch long threaded rod section. They come with knobs, so it's all 1032 based. And we also have a dovetail nut that has a brass insert in it, so you can put a screw down through something into the dovetail nut. So that whole match fit system has become extremely popular. We have a new system coming out by the end of March. We're going to be launching a new clamping system for the CNC machine, but also those clamps, even though they're designed for the CNC machine, will work very well on clamping tables, which a lot of our customers are making now. They're actually making a workbench with a grid of these dovetail cuts, 4x4 pattern across the top of the table. And that allows you to set clamps anywhere on it that you want to for clamping and holding things while you're working on them. It's become kind of a big deal around the woodworking hobby. And we're feeding into that and, you know, releasing all sorts of new interesting clamps that hold pieces from the sides, leaving the top free, or hold it from the top so you can cut out, all of that sort of thing. So that's all coming out later this first quarter, just as the early spring starts.
Well, that's a great idea because I'm building this assembly box, but I haven't cut my grooves in it yet. And maybe I'll just put dovetails in it instead.
Wouldn't be a bad idea. You need to be 3/4 inch thick. Well, if you're building, you're the one building the torsion box?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, my top is 3/4 inch.
Okay, good. So in that case, yes, you could use the dovetail system for sure. And it cuts 3/8 deep, so you're going to leave the 3/8 behind. You've got the torsion box underneath it. One of the questions I get a lot from customers is, you know, what's the best material to make this tabletop out of? And I tell them, MDF or plywood are our preferences. But it's less important about that than it is what the support structure underneath it is. Because it doesn't matter what you make a table out of, if it's not supported properly, ultimately it will sag. And that's bad.
Right.
So the torsion box that you're doing will be fantastic. And it'll be a really good opportunity for that system. We do make a dovetail bit. You can use any 1/2 inch 14-degree dovetail bit. But the problem with a standard dovetail is when you cut the groove, the top where the bit exits the material is a sharp point on both sides. So we created a bit that it's still the same 1/2 inch 14-degree dovetail, but at the 3/8 point where it's going to emerge from the wood, we actually have a radius on each side that flares up and out. So when you cut the groove, it actually automatically rounds over and smooths out that top edge. So you don't have to go back through and sand everything and you don't have splinters.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. You do want to cut relief grooves because the dovetail bit, like a T-slot bit, for example, is an undercut, right? So the material you're removing, the groove is wider than the opening at the top. So chips will tend to get trapped and that just kills bits because you end up overheating your router bits with all the extra cutting. And so we always recommend cutting a 1/4 inch, 5/16 deep, 1/4 inch wide relief groove along the same path first and then set your router bit, your dovetail bit, to make the second pass.
Oh.
And that way it gets a cleaner pass. It's much easier on the bits, so your bits will last a lot longer. I want to let all of your members know that they can reach out to us. Our office is manned with people. We pick up the phone, unless we get inundated with calls, but 855-747-7233 is our number, our office number. And anytime any of your members have any questions about any of our stuff or need advice or how to, that's what we're there for. I don't know. I can't remember the gentleman's name. It was several years ago, but I distinctly remember sitting in a hotel room. I was traveling and I ended up on a phone with a gentleman who was sight impaired, and he had bought the taper jig. And on the phone, I was able to instruct him on how to assemble his taper jig because he had all the parts laid out by feel. And it took us about a half an hour, 45 minutes, and we got it assembled. And then he ended up buying a gripper so that he could attach it and leave it on the taper jig. So he called me a couple of weeks later and he said, yeah, when I bought my first grippers, I had my grandson assemble them for me. He's not around and I want to put this on my taper jig. So again, about a half an hour and we assembled the gripper over the phone together. So that was really kind of an interesting experience for me. But we are available, and Henry wanted me to let you all know, of course you can ask more questions as we go, but we're going to offer to your group members a 50% discount on any microjig product that you guys want to buy.
Oh, well, thank you. That's wonderful.
So this is being recorded, which is good. My email is Ralph, R-A-L-P-H, at microjig.com. And anybody who wants to take advantage of this offer, if they send me an email, we're going to create a coupon code that you can use on our website. So you go to our website, and when you're checking out, you'll be able to use the coupon code, and we'll do a one-time coupon code for your group that they can buy whatever they want, and we'll give them 50% off the retail cost buying through our website. We're going to extend that to your group, and I hope a bunch of you do take advantage of it. You had mentioned the gripper not only being safer, but also giving you better cuts. And that's one of the things that it really stands out about.
Absolutely.
It is all about the safety. And for me, it makes my work experience in the shop more enjoyable because I'm not as worried about my digits. But the control that it gives you, it just gives you better quality cuts. The gripper holds the stock from the top. And usually your typical setup is with one leg on the rip side of the blade and at least one leg on the off-fall side. And while you're cutting, that keeps both sides of the cut parallel to the blade. When you feel those tool marks on the edge of your fresh rip cut, or if you get burn marks there, that's typically not from the front of the blade where the cut's being made. That's from the back of the blade. With a push stick, those parts can move away from the fence or toward the fence and rub against that back side of the blade, and that's where those tool marks come from. And of course, there's a kickback hazard there if one of those teeth happens to catch. The gripper keeps everything parallel to the blade throughout the cut, and that's why those cuts come out so clean and so nice, is because of that control that it gives you all the way through the cutting process. We want to encourage every woodworker to use grippers, but we're especially happy to help you guys out. And again, we're going to extend that. That's basically our employee discount program for our retail partners, and we're going to extend it to you guys as well, your group, so that you guys can take advantage of the microjig safety as well. So that's out there.
Well, thank you so much. I'm going to need Bob Kennedy's credit card for this, I can see. That's an old joke with this group. Unless you guys have covered everything you basically wanted to, if not, keep going, or I'm going to open it up for member questions.
Love to take the questions.
Denver Dale, this is 50%. I'm absolutely flabbergasted at that. That is amazing. Thank you so much.
That's what happens when you've got the founder of the company with you. You can get away with this stuff.
Is there a time frame regarding that? You know, this is this recording in 5 years. Is that still going to be valid?
Well, 5 years, it's probably a long time. I would say, you know, within a year, as long as you letting us know, particularly say, you know, letting Ralph know that you are a member of this group, and then I'll honor that.
I'm very generous with Henry's money.
Sounds like us with Bob's credit card.
Exactly.
One thing, though, I know this group is worldwide, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So we are offering the 50% off on the products, okay? Now, if any of the member is out of US, I don't do the shipping myself, so I don't know what is the cost of the shipping costs, you know, but within US, you know, we know pretty much what is it. if someone, say, from other country want to order, we will do our best to get the good shipping rate if any of the member outside of US is ordering.
Oh, well, thank you.
Again, I want to encourage people to reach out to me first, and I'll help expedite this, especially for anybody overseas. For example, we have a distributor in Australia who manages distribution throughout the continent there. And in that case, rather than paying for shipping from the U.S. to the customer, we might be able to just work out a deal to reimburse them for giving you the 50% discount, that kind of thing. We have a German distributor. We're working on Canada. So basically, if the member is not in the U.S. and contacts me directly, we'll work on figuring it out with them in the best way for everybody. You know, regardless, it's obviously going to be a whole lot easier to help out, you know, the members from the U.S., but I don't want people from outside the U.S. to not reach out to us. Reach out to me and we will work out the best way to make it happen one way or the other. And if you're getting 50% off, you know, even if you're paying a little bit of extra shipping, it's probably still a good deal.
Absolutely.
So we're going to work with anybody who contacts us. Again, ralph@microjig.com is the easy way to reach me. And then I will work with your members either via email or over the phone to work out whatever we need to do.
That's terrific.
Jeff Thompson.
Go ahead, Mr. Jeff.
I want to thank you for everything you've been talking about here and the offers that you're offering us. I just want to compliment you on the YouTube videos of the demonstrations. I've had my gripper for quite a while, and I just decided to jump on there because we're having this event here on Woodworkers for the Blind, and I just got sucked into the gripper and the extension that it comes with as well. It's well done, and I could follow it to the words they were using and everything like that. So thank you very much for all that.
We appreciate that. We work very hard on it. The tall, thin guy, Morgan, has done a lot of work for us.
Mm-hmm.
I did a lot of the early videos, and now I'm doing a lot of the current videos myself as well. So yeah, we certainly appreciate that. We try very, very hard to provide all the information. You know, we don't want people to have to figure it out by themselves. We want them successful with their grippers as quickly as possible. So we work very hard on that. And again, I'm going to encourage all of your members, anybody who has questions or needs a detailed explanation about a tricky cut or anything like that, that's one of the things I do. I was talking with a woman yesterday who called me up, and she's just starting out in the hobby. You know, she's trying to figure out what to buy. And we talked about the table saw she wants. And I spent a good half hour on the phone with her, just kind of talking her through some of the basic startup stuff that she needed to know. And I just enjoy doing that. I travel around to a lot of shows and such. We do a lot of that. In fact, I'm flying out to Phoenix, Arizona on Friday to do a show there. We have a lot of fun with it. So don't hesitate to reach out to us.
One last thing on the video. You're not the one that taught Morgan how to clear off the table saw like he does.
No, that wasn't me. Yeah, I've seen that. We used to do we had the kickback machine that went to a couple of shows with us, and that thing's kind of terrifying. But, you know, I had my table saw accident 35 years ago when I was just starting out. You know, I got really serious about safety after that. You know, you're young, you think you can get away with anything. Like Henry said, I discovered the grippers probably 15, 16 years ago. I just adopted it and started working with the company as a consultant and as a contractor for many years. And then back in 2020, Henry hired me full time. So now I'm in Orlando, Florida, and, you know, we work together every day.
Thank you.
This is Daryl again. Henry, I wanted to tell you, I love details. As much as these little O-rings drove me crazy trying to pick them up, that is an ingenious idea, because I'm forever, well, not always, but every time I change sides on my gripper, I don't have to go looking for screws. Those screws, as aggravating as the O-rings are, because they're so small, once they're on there, the screws are just about as small and hard to find. So it's just what I'm really talking about is when you take these things loose and lay them down, the screws stay on the part now because of that little O-ring in there. It's just the coolest idea, and it's simple, you know? It's just simple.
Thank you. Like I say, you know, once I come up with the ideas, then I spend more time of refining things around the product. So, and that's one of them. Thank you.
I like that one. I mean, like I said, they were hard to pick up, but oh, I love them now, I tell you.
Thank you. Thank you. I think there's one more thing on the match fit is the expat. Ralph, would you like to?
Yeah, I had forgotten about that. Our AP clamp comes with a device called the X-Pad. Now, like most F-style clamps, the Acme screw on all of our clamps has that plastic yellow cap on the end of the Acme screw so that, you know, it protects the wood while you're tightening it.
Mm-hmm.
But Henry came up with the idea of the X-Pad. It's a square-ish block that slides, has a U-shaped cut in it, so it slides over the existing clamp head or the end of the pad, at the clamping pad at the end of the Acme screw. And it has a V-notch running through it one way, so if you're trying to clamp a round dowel or something like that, that's a fairly standard feature on clamp pads now. But running perpendicular to that, side to side, is a second notch. And the notch, it's a 90-degree included angle, but it's not a V like you would use to hold a dowel. The notch is probably at a 60-degree angle off of the pad bottom. And it's just off-center from the axis of pressure for the clamp pad. I know that's a lot of words, but what the effect is, if you set that secondary notch up against the top edge of your part and then apply the pressure with the clamp, because the clamp head is held within the clamping table, as the pressure is applied, that X-pad, the notch is off-center from the pressure, the line that the clamp is moving in, the head, and so it rotates down and in toward applying pressure in two directions.
Oh.
So not only is it holding the part down, but it's actually pushing the part away from the arm of the clamp. So if you've got a stop block, and let's say you're gluing up a couple of sticks to make a cutting board or something, this setup will actually not only push down on that end piece, but push them all together. It only gives you about an eighth of an inch of actual movement in a typical clamping, but it's a really nice feature for doing some of that stuff. And it applies that pressure in two different directions, so it makes it really easy to work with. Now, that pad comes with every AP clamp that we sell, but we sell a four-pack of those X-pads so they can be applied to your, you know, if you've already got some of the regular 538 clamp, they work very well with that clamp as well. That's available as well for that match fit system.
Oh, see, that's a really neat idea. I'm going to have to get those for my assembly box.
Yeah, you're gonna love it. It's a great system. And it, again, as a jig and fixture maker, we've just started. It's been out for about 5 years now, the clamp started. But we're just really scratching the surface on what this system can do. And so we're having a lot of fun with it. So any other questions that people have?
This is Trey. I assume that your lock miter bit is carbide coated. As a consumer, how do we evaluate different carbide bits? Is it the quality of the carbide? Is it the thickness of the carbide on top of the steel? How do we know at the spec?
It's kind of all of the above. So there's a couple of things. There are different grades of carbide. And sadly, there's many different grades of carbide. But most machine tools like router bits are made with either a C4 or a C3 carbide. And the difference between them, they're both good quality carbides. If I'm remembering correctly, a C4 is a harder grade, so it holds a sharper edge, but it's more brittle. And a C3 is a slightly softer metal, but so it doesn't hold quite the same edge, but it's less fragile. It could be the other way around, but that's basically the difference between the two. Functionally, they both should last for a good long time. Most of us should not actually wear out a carbide tooth, whether it's on a saw blade or a router. What typically happens, heat is the enemy of carbide. Carbide is actually not a metal by itself. It's particles of carbide that are embedded in a tungsten matrix. Okay. What happens is when the carbide overheats, the tungsten matrix starts to dissolve or break up and the carbide particles go flying off. They're microscopic, so you don't see them or anything. But of course, that's going to happen where the heat is strongest, which is going to be at the very cutting edge where the metal is thinnest. And that's where all the action is happening and the metal is thinnest there. So when you're cutting with a router, you want to be turning the router bit as slowly as possible and moving your stock or your router as quickly as possible to minimize that heat buildup. With a CNC machine, you know you're programming it right when you can, you know, cut for 10 minutes on a piece of plywood. And then when the bit comes up out of the wood and the machine stops turning, you should be able to grab that bit and it's not going to be too hot to touch. It should be warm, but not hot in your hands. But of course, with a hand router, it's much more difficult to do that. But that's why we talk about feeds and speeds. That's why we talk about our lock miter bit is, I believe we use a C3 carbide. I haven't broken one yet, and I've probably used it more than anybody else in the country at this point. And again, that bit's not too hard to keep clean and to keep, you know, to keep cool because it is turning at about, we recommend no more than 12,000 RPM, and you're using it in the router table. So that one shouldn't get too hot because most of the rotation is not cutting wood. And then, of course, if you have your dust collection hooked up, you've got a nice breeze blowing through it. So that one should stay cool. The thickness of the carbide is important with a router bit because if it's thin, it can be brittle. But we don't generally sharpen router bits very often, so it's not too critical there. But on a saw blade, it certainly is, because the thicker the carbide being used on a saw blade, the more sharpenings you can get out of it before it has to be replaced. So I hope that answered your question.
It does. Thanks.
Anyone else?
Andrew.
Hey, Andrew.
I just had a couple of questions. First one is, I have searched long and hard because I've actually lost a couple of those pads on my Magic Fit clamps. Do you guys sell replacement pads for those?
We don't sell them, but if you contact me, I'll get you some.
Okay, thank you. The second question was, I think I heard you mention that with the MatchFit clamps, you have used them in MDF, and I've always been apprehensive about doing that because I didn't think the MDF would stand up to the clamping forces. Have you had a different experience with that?
Yes, everybody thinks the same thing, and you're not incorrect in your thought process, which is, okay, you've got this dovetail head inside the MDF, and when I apply pressure, it's going to be pulling up on that, and it's going to want to just tear right out. Except that the pad of your clamp is directly over the top of that body of the clamp or the head inside the groove. As long as you're clamping something above the groove, as you apply the pressure that's trying to lift that head up out of your MDF is also pressing down on whatever it is you're clamping. And so it's a self-supporting system. It does not break out like that. However, the only thing you have to watch is if for some reason there's a gap above the groove, you know, like maybe you have a piece on each side of the groove and you're trying to glue something down on top of it to join the two together with a gap in between them. If you formed a bridge like that, then yes, there's nothing holding that clamp head from pulling up through. You can apply a certain amount of pressure that way, but you have to be real careful with it. The other situation would be the clamp head is reversible. So unlike a lot of clamps where once they put the clamp arm onto the body of the clamp, the bar, they swage the end of it, they round it over or something to keep it from coming off. We use an M4 screw, an Allen head screw. So you can actually take that screw out, pull the arm off and reverse it 180 degrees. And I've done that for router table jigs and sleds where I want the head to hold the part, but I want the clamp to hold the part, but I don't want the head too close to where my blade's going to be. But again, in that case, the pressure that the clamp is applying when you turn the Acme screw is not directly over the head anymore. The head's behind it. And so you are going to get some leverage there. And there's, again, a limited amount of clamping force you can apply that way. But if you've got the clamp in the groove and you're clamping down onto a piece of stock that you want to hold in place while you're cutting it or routing it or whatever, you can apply as much force as your hand can do. And you're not going to pull out because the sides of that groove are being supported by the wood you're actually clamping.
Okay, fantastic. Thank you. The other thing that you mentioned was you were going to be at an event here in the Phoenix area. I just happen to live in Phoenix. What event would that be?
The local woodcraft store in Chandler, Arizona is Saturday. They're doing the annual event every January. And that'll be Saturday in Chandler. I think it goes from like 8 till 5 or so on Saturday. And I'm going to be there all day doing demos and showing things off.
Oh, very cool. About 25 miles from me. I'll see if I can make it over there. Thanks.
If you do, by all means, come by and introduce yourself. I'd love to shake your hand.
All right. Thank you.
Do you do the Klingspor show too then?
I do.
This is George Wurzel asking about the Klingspor show.
Okay, George.
I'm one of the people who turn for Rikon all the time.
Okay.
I do that Klingspor show every year for them. I'll have to make sure I look you up next year when we do that show.
Yeah, definitely. Were you the one turning the huge bowl this past show? Or a plate? There was a huge plate being turned in the Rikon booth at one point I saw.
No, I didn't turn that one, but I did a couple years ago at the show. I turned off huge plate for them or a huge bowl for them.
Oh, okay.
I've been working in their booth for 5 years now, turning for them.
So you know Joe and the team there?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Good people. All good people.
Oh my gosh, yeah. They treat me really, really well.
Yeah. That's one of my favorite events to go to is the Klingspor one.
This is Daryl. I just want to, everybody can stick around, but I want to tell Henry and Ralph that normally these calls, we go an hour, and I think we're probably a little past that right now. You guys are welcome to stay and talk, or if you need to go, don't hesitate to just,
This is Henry. I'll stay as long as until the last one.
He's braver than I am because I know you guys talk all night. Yeah, I'll stick around for a few extra minutes too if people still have questions.
This is Bob. Could you repeat your phone number?
Yeah, it's MicroJig's number. It's 855-747-7233.
Thank you.
What about the website?
MicroJig.com.
I will also tell everybody it works well with a screen reader. You won't have any trouble using it.
One suggestion on your website that would help the visually impaired as well as the older woodworkers losing their central vision, if you could put more contrast into your images, the yellow products on a light background is a little hard to see. So if there could be more contrast, that'd be really helpful.
That's an excellent.
Thank you so much. We appreciate it.
No, that's an excellent suggestion. And I will be talking with Henry's son, Bruce, who is our CEO and our graphics guy who manages our website. We're going to be meeting, well, we talk every day, but we're going to be meeting on some of these issues in the near future. I will make sure to mention that because that's an interesting observation that, you know, those of us who aren't visually impaired might not think about. I have a daughter with cerebral palsy, so she has a walking disability. She's in her 30s now. She's a lawyer. But I've learned that my perspective isn't the only one and that, you know, there are things that she experiences and has issues with that I would never even think twice about. And so it's good to have that kind of feedback from you. And it's very much appreciated by us because we want to make it as strong for everybody as we can.
This is Jeff.
Yeah, Jeff.
I really want to thank you for coming up with the go because that is exactly like Daryl was saying. You just want to go. You reach over and you know you got to switch it up a little bit. I see that it has multiple spots. Can you turn that around the other way to use it as well? Or is it just because of the thumb detent?
No, there's actually four detents in the handle.
Oh.
There's two on each side. And they're equidistant from each end. So yes, and the way that the whole thing works is it's 180 degrees. So the three legs are on one side, the outside leg is perfectly aligned with the side of the gripper to go. Mm-hmm. On the opposite side, the side of the body is offset by about a half an inch from the leg. So if you present it with the leg one side against the fence, you can cut down to 5/16 of an inch wide without hitting the leg.
Mm-hmm.
But if, let's say you were cutting a little wider at, at the 1 inch mark, if you were to have that face against the fence, you'd be cutting into one of your legs. You can turn it 180 degrees. There's no cut underneath the gripper to go that you can't make and hit a leg. So if it doesn't work one way, it's going to work the other. Now, being visually impaired, you're going to want to do a test pass and figure out which way it is before you make the cut. One of the features of that tool is when you open up the package, there's a sticker that comes with it that can be applied. It's transparent and it applies to your rip fence scale and it's color coded. So there's four blocks of color. And when you set your cut, whatever color is showing under the cursor, there's a matching color on the body of the unit. If that's facing you, you won't cut the leg. So we call that the safe cut index.
Oh.
Unfortunately, it's primarily visual. Again, we created that so that a new user can have that visual cue to make sure that they don't cut into their leg. But with the standard gripper, I have always taught people, especially when you're working close to the blade, you want to bring that center leg over right near it or whatever. Always do a check pass before you turn the saw on. If you slide the gripper past the blade, you'll feel if it's going to hit or not and without damaging your gripper because the saw is not on. So you'd want to do that with the gripper to go, but you could also probably, once you get used to using it, you can memorize which side should be against the fence for particular cut settings. I happen to know because I've done the demo enough, if you're set to a half an inch, you're going to want the flat side against the fence. If you're set to a 1 inch cut, you're going to want it reversed with the offset against the fence. So if you used it enough, you could memorize that. But again, a simple physical check pass will tell you if it's going to cut into the leg or not. But yeah, you can rotate the whole thing 180 degrees. So the reason there's four detents, I put my hand on the handle, find that detent with my thumb. If I'm right-handed, then the detent's going to be on the left side of the handle and it'll be away from me on the gripper to go. Mm-hmm. And then by putting my thumb there and then lowering my palm down, my palm is going to hit the curve of the handle just as where it turns to go down into the gripper. And that's where I want my palm to rest so that you're not pushing the back end up. You know, you're, when you push forward, you're going to get a nice, there's no tendency for it to tip forward.
Yeah.
Now, if I'm left-handed, I'm going to have my thumb in the forward groove again, but this time it'll be on the right side of the body when I use my left hand. And then if you reverse it, those same two positions are now at the front. So there's four, you know, two hands, two different positions for the gripper, four thumbprints. And they're very small, but they're tactically, you can certainly feel them.
Thank you very much.
This is Scott. I don't really have any questions, but I wanted to thank you guys for your generous offer and for taking your time to be here and explain all this stuff, because you just explained a whole bunch of things that were confusing me just by reading descriptions. So yeah, I've been on your website and I can see my wallet taking a hit. So this is going to be fun.
A little less hit than it was going to be.
Exactly. Though. That's wonderful. Now I can just buy more.
And again, though, anytime you're confused by something or you don't understand, you know, the description, don't ever hesitate to reach out to me.
Okay.
Because I don't mind talking through it. And in fact, I love doing it. So just feel free to reach out whenever. You're not going to be bugging us. That's what we're there for.
Well, yeah, but I'm excited. I haven't been into actual woodworking for all that long. I mean, I've been a fair rough carpenter for a while, but I'm just getting into the woodworking aspect of it. And I'm having fun. I don't know what I'm doing. And I make a lot of mistakes and make a lot of big pieces into little pieces and throw them away, but I'm having fun.
That's the whole point.
Another thing about the gripper is cutting small pieces. I used to do that on the outside of the board just because you can't really get a hole down and a push stick and all that stuff. And now it changes the whole ball game where you can rip down to 1/4 inch, 5/16 and use that piece because it's clean.
And it's going to be more consistent if you have to cut a bunch of them. You know, the old way of having the off fall,
yeah,
you use a, what we call a thin rip jig. So you set a stop on the other side of the blade at 1/8 inch away or 1/4 inch or whatever you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then you slide your fence over until the part hits that and then cut it off and you slide the fence.
Every time.
Right. And of course, the problem is that if you push against that stop a little bit harder this time and a little less hard the next time, you're going to have two very slightly different pieces. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it doesn't matter, but often it will. And by ripping against the fence, it's going to be consistently always the same thickness. Even if you're not exactly at the dimension you wanted, most of the time in woodworking, consistency is more important than accuracy.
Yeah, exactly. The Lincoln Logs especially.
There you go. On my website, my personal website, there's a set of plans for making your own Lincoln Logs. I did that years ago.
Yeah, I just got the router bit set to make them. Actually, I've had it for 5 years, but I just found them again. I keep on thinking I'm going to do it. I'm running out of grandkids, so I better start.
I'm hoping when you say you're running out of grandkids, it just means you're getting too old for the Lincoln Logs.
They'll come around. They'll come around. We all come back to Lincoln Logs.
Yeah, no kidding. That's why I
built. Do you ever outgrow Lincoln Logs? I don't think so.
What's your personal web address, website?
It's called Woodcademy. So it's WOODCADEMY.com. So it's like Wood Academy without the A in the middle. Woodcademy was designed for, I've written for the various magazines since 2000. So Woodworkers Journal, Wood Magazine, Woodcraft Magazine, and now Popular Woodworking I'm writing for right now. And I get into doing writing articles because at some point you outgrow the magazine. And so at one point I subscribed to everything, right? I didn't know it all, but I had outgrown what they were teaching because they are geared toward the novice. And so at that point I kind of decided, well, if I can't read the articles, maybe I'll just make them up myself. And that's turned into many years of writing for these people. But basically my website is kind of designed to help those people who've reached that point like I had and then move it a little bit further along the path to mastery. So it's not quite novice, but it's not super involved either. It's more tips and tricks and skill building videos and lots of project plans. Basically, everything on the website is free. The only thing that's not free is I have a couple of physical books that I sell, and you know, those cost money to print. But other than that, all the digital stuff, all the video and everything is all free. And yeah, again, reach out to me if you have questions or whatever. You can reach me through the website, ralph@woodcademy.com. There's a contact page there. Because yeah, I would love to know. I do Squarespace as my, they're managing my website. So if there's things I can do to make that more accessible to you guys, then I'd love to hear about that too.
Hey, Ralph, I wanted to, you just said something really, actually, it's kind of incredible. Woodworking of the, for the blind started by a man named Larry Martin. And Larry, there was an article, and you have to go back to our website and actually read the whole thing. But anyway, he realized that blind woodworkers, he was helping a guy figure out how a whirligig works. And the guy was blind, of course. And Larry found out or understood that what we didn't have that everybody else had was information. So the reason that woodworking for the blind even exists and out on our website, and the general populace can't get there, but out on our website, there's over 6,000 articles that are recorded out of Woodworking Magazine since 2004.
Cool.
And Larry recorded all those for us. You know, Larry passed away a couple of years ago, sadly. But I'm sure we have listened to a lot of your articles, you know, because...
Probably.
Like I said, they're in a protected area of the website, you know, for copyright laws. But anybody who's blind or can't read normal printed material can access that if they meet our qualifications. That's really what the whole website was there for to begin with. And that's how I found Larry Martin way back in 2006.
Now, let me ask you a question. Are you looking for somebody to continue that process of reading and recording?
Yes, we are. I wished we could because... like I said, Larry hadn't been able. Oh, that would be great, Ralph. I mean, honestly, I just can't tell you how great that would be. Larry was just one of the most generous, kindest men you could ever meet.
Well, and I know a lot of the editors to these magazines because I work with them. So getting permission and copyright issues and stuff like that is not going to be a problem.
With U.S. copyright law, as long as it's recorded where we don't let normal, like you couldn't go to that part of our site and listen to those articles because, you know, you're cited. You could go read them. And it's all part of the ADA, the American Disabilities Act, is what makes that possible. So technically, we don't need anybody. It's all right to get permission. I'm just saying technically, you wouldn't need it.
Right.
You
know? But believe me when I tell you, they'll be all over it. There's no question that, for example, Chris Marshall just took over at Woodworkers Journal. It used to be Rob Johnson was the publisher. And now he just retired this year. And so now Chris Marshall is there. Well, Chris and I are old friends. He edited my current book out on CNC machines. He edited. So, you know, we've worked together and we know each other very well.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah.
And, you know, I work with, like I said, I'm working with Pop Wood right now. So, and by the way, the articles that I write, the magazines actually, they buy the rights of first publication. After 6 months or 6 months after the article is published, I have the opportunity to reuse that information in any way I want to. I can because they give me permission. I can literally reprint the magazine article, but you'll find that a lot of the articles I've written over the years, I've turned into full-blown like 20-page plans that are available on the website because I've expanded on it and, you know, just talked about everything I wanted to do that I couldn't do in a 4-page magazine article.
Well, this is terrific.
Let's have a conversation because I would love to do the reading and I've actually got recording equipment because I voice over, you know, the videos I do and everything. So I'd need to know, you know, what formats you guys need and stuff like that. But I'm a big audiobook fan to begin with, right? I have my hearing protection in the shop and I listen to audiobooks while I'm working. And
great.
So I think it would be awesome to do this.
Oh, cool. Well, that's wonderful. Definitely reach out to you. You know, it's one of the reasons for our whole purpose of being, and we sort of lost that. I don't think we had a magazine article recorded since like 2017, I think.
Well, we got a lot of work to do then.
You
got to
make up a lot of ground. But no, we would appreciate that so much. I mean, like I said, information is really just because the only thing we really do differently than any other woodworker is how we mark and measure.
Right.
You know, otherwise we use all the same equipment. I'm probably one of the few guys in our whole group that has a short finger, but you know, I did that when I could still see.
I did mine when I could see. So yeah, I get that.
It happens. So yeah, it would be wonderful. I'll definitely be reaching out to you, Ralph. Thank you so much. Thank you for all this. It's been wonderful.
No, I'm thrilled. I think it's awesome. I'm glad we took the time to do it. And I don't want to hog all the spotlight here with Henry still around. So if anybody's got questions for Henry, you're still here, Henry?
Yeah, I'm either here.
Oh, yeah, he's here. Henry's taking off tomorrow to go skiing for the weekend.
Oh, well, you bless your heart.
Yeah, he doesn't ski, though.
I'm just bringing my grandkids there to have fun.
There you go. It sounds like a great time to me. Yeah. I want to thank you guys so much. You've been great, very generous with your time and the discount code, and I'll be spending a lot of money.
All right. Well, thank you all very much.
Thank you all.
Again, don't ever hesitate to reach out to us if you need anything. That's what we're here for.
All right. Well, we love your products.
Thank you very much.
This is Dennis. Henry and Ralph, thank you very much for being on our group and for the offer that you've made. So thank you.
All righty, gentlemen, and any ladies that might be with us, thank you very much. And I'm sure I'll be hearing from some of you soon.
Thank you. Thank you. Right.
Thanks again, Henry.
Have a great night, everybody.
You're welcome.
You are certainly welcome.
All right. Goodbye.
Be sure to check out www4b.org, Woodworkers for the Blind. Become part of the community and learn from others. Hope you enjoyed, and until next time, bye-bye.